From Cambridge 105, this is Election Studio.
Welcome to a new season of Election Studio. On May the 4th, we'll be voting for the first mayor of Cambridgeshire and Peterborough. They'll head up the Cambridgeshire and Peterborough combined authority and a budget of £600 million. Over the next three programmes, we'll be speaking to each of the seven candidates. In a moment, the only independent, Peter Dore. But first, Rod Cantrell. Rod Cantrell grew up in a mining community in North Nottinghamshire and read architecture at the University of Cambridge. He's the managing director of Millington Advisory Partners, an independent financial advisory company. He's been a trustee of Winter Comfort for the homeless since 2006 and a city councillor for Newnham since 2004. Rod, welcome to Cambridge 105 and the Election Studio. You're a financial advisor by career, although I think that's more mergers and acquisitions than it is pensions. What financial advice do you have for the district, city and the county councils around our area?
Well, my advice would be based on my experience and knowledge and skills that I've had over a career. Combining that both as owning and running my business, and also as for over a decade as a city councillor. And I think it's important that the local authorities, regardless of what type or nature, they're able to use the financial resources that they have as efficiently as possible. But they're different from a commercial organisation in that they have that important component, which is social capital. And in the role of mayor, as I've gone around the region and listened to people, people want authorities to do more than just the black and white. They want them to actually apply that social capital in a way that makes a difference to people's lives.
And by social capital, you're meaning the investment that they've made, say, for example, council houses, for example?
Yeah, well, let me give you a good illustration. You know, the mayor has £100 million to spend on affordable housing. And he can do a number of things with that in addition to just delivering the affordable housing, which everybody knows that this city and the region needs. He can actually build into the contracts with the builders skills, for example, employing apprentices. He can also build into the specification sustainable houses. A good illustration, when I was an executive councillor, I put in place the foundation for 200 sustainable homes that are being built on the southern fringe at the moment, 50% of which are affordable. And the goal of the city council at that point was to demonstrate, by setting the bar really high, to other developers that you can build a development with high spec sustainable homes with a level of affordability that's actually higher than the local plan, 40%, and we had a target of 50%, and it was still financially viable.
So it's sustainable. They might have some sort of solar power on the roof in order to pull in materials
whole mixture of things. So that actually what the bottom line is that the residents, their fuel bills, their energy bills are cut materially. It could include grey water recycling, those types of measures, very much along the lines of the BREEAM high, the quality home mark, which is a level of sustainability comparable to what was Code 5 in the old sustainable homes remit.
Mm. Yeah, this term, affordable homes, I guess even if you can afford the home in the first place, you've then of course got the ongoing costs on top of all of that, which you have to meet. And so anything which can be done to the property in order to reduce those costs is going to be very welcome indeed.
Yeah, look, this definition of affordable homes is ridiculous, as you know and I know and all the residents of Cambridge know, that affordable, the definition of affordable in the city is not affordable. You know, I've got kids who won't be able to afford to buy a home in this city. And for many people, it's not just about buying a home, it's actually being able to rent a home in this city. So I have an idea, which is I'd like to pursue as mayor, as part of the delivery of affordable homes, is a local local living rent. And that's based on, instead of taking a market rent and applying a discount, so currently the city council takes a market rent and applies a discount of 20%. This would be based on someone's income, and it would be a third of their income. Shelter, a national charity, argues that the right amount of money someone should be spending on rent is a third of their income. And this is a product, it's not my idea, it's being developed by Sadiq Khan in London, Mayor of London. And this is a product which would be, I would look to include as part of those new developments with affordable homes on them, which would enable people to actually afford to rent in the city. And that's just normal people with normal jobs, like teachers, like nurses, people who are doing important roles within the city and at this moment in time cannot afford to live here.
It's interesting, isn't it? I'm sure you're familiar with the part of Cambridge which we broadcast from. It's Petersfield. Many of the properties here were put up by a gentleman by the name of Sir Joseph Sturton. I believe he did so in order to help his workers along. And there's a building right on the corner of the industrial park where we are, and I think it was sold for something like £700,000-£800,000. Admittedly, had a bit of work done compared to what Sir Joseph had arranged in the late Victorian period. But that's the challenge, isn't it? And I wonder if part of the mayor's role is perhaps to find some modern Sir Joseph Sturtons, even if it's got PLC at the end of the name, and try and get those companies to contribute.
Well, those modern philanthropists or whatever, actually, I would take a different position. I would argue that it's who owns the land, and the some of the largest landowners in the city and around the city are the local authorities. And the local authorities at the moment, there is an opportunity for them, just as I explained in relation to the site on the Southern Fringe, where you increase the level of affordable housing above what the local plan is insisting, because actually that will enable you to deliver those affordable homes. And we live in a crazy situation where people like teachers are living north of Ely to travel into the city to work as teachers. And actually what's happening is the county council has a teaching crisis because those teachers are voting with their feet because the quality of life is such that they're moved to somewhere else in the country.
If you're a teacher, you go to somewhere where you could probably walk to work if you had the opportunity, wouldn't you?
If you go to Durham or somewhere like that, you can buy a three-bedroom house for about £150,000. You can walk to work. The quality of life is much greater. And so we face a point here where the growth of the city is not sustainable unless we address these fundamental issues.
We'll come to how the teacher from Ely manages to get into Cambridge on transport a little later on. But I'd like to ask a little bit about the body on which you're going to be sitting. If you're elected, you'll be a Lib Dem mayor, and assuming nothing dramatic happens on May the 4th, you're going to be overseeing six Conservative-run councils and one Labour-run council. And they've already started holding meetings already before you've even got there. Do you think that could have been better organised?
Well, firstly, we just have to roll back slightly and say, what is devolution? And for me, devolution is about empowering people. It's giving people the opportunity to actually have a say. And as mayor, I will be the mayor for the people of the region. And I will listen to the people of the region and I will be their voice. And if you look at the construct of the combined authority, as you described, they are of a different political colour. I would like to think that certainly one of those authorities may be a Liberal Democrat leader after the 4th of May, which could be the County Council. But regardless of the political colour, I have experience of working with parties across the political spectrum as part of the Remain campaign. I was a passionate Remainer. I was very heavily involved in Cambridge for Europe, and I worked with those political parties, and I stepped outside of the party political straitjacket because it was something I was passionate about, and I would apply that philosophy to the role of mayor.
Is there a danger, though, that taking all that on board, where the way that it's been constructed with, if you like, the revised plan after Norfolk and Suffolk were taken out or took themselves out of the equation, that we have an area which is going to be Conservative forevermore and make your job even more difficult?
I believe that actually politics has changed since the referendum last year. And I believe as mayor, actually what people want is somebody who will be a strong voice for them, a strong voice on delivering sustainable growth, and importantly, a strong voice on Brexit. And as mayor, I will be that strong voice. And I don't think there's another candidate who would be as strong a voice, who will ensure that Europeans who live across the region have a resident of security of residency, who will ensure we have continued access to the European single market, who will ensure that we get more funding for the region to cushion us from Brexit. And the reality is that if you want to send a very clear message to Theresa May and her government that this hardline Brexit is not the right approach, the best way to do that is to vote for a Liberal Democrat mayor on the 4th of May, because that's the strongest message. This government will only listen if they lose elections. And actually, voting Liberal Democrat on the 4th of May will deliver that message in a very clear and simple way.
And we do see, be it voting Liberal Democrat, Labour or Conservative or other parties, people do sometimes pick and choose, if you like, who they vote for according to, I guess, the kind of election that it is, be it local or national. One person on the board of the combined authority who hasn't been elected, at least not elected by the likes of me and Cambridge 105 listeners, and that's the representative of the LEP, representing business, I guess. How does that work? Is that something you approve of? You don't get any other major groupings. Well, you don't have somebody from the Housing Association sitting on there, for example.
Yeah, well, firstly, let me say the only person who will really be directly elected by approximately 600,000 people is the mayor. The mayor will have
that. At least the others have been elected as leaders of their respective councils.
They've been elected as leaders of their respective councils. But the only person who will have that direct franchise is the mayor. And then let's move on to the LEP. The LEP in itself, I have real issues with the governance of the LEP, let alone its role on the combined authority. I've been very public about it. One of the region's MPs is very concerned about some of the issues with the LEP. I've written to the chair of the combined authority and said that the LEP should step aside, the representative of the LEP should step aside from the board until these issues are resolved, because I think it goes to the heart of the credibility of the combined authority, that actually the combined authority is in its infancy, and the public trust and the public confidence in the combined authority needs to be such that the combined authority needs to make sure they take the public on the journey with them. And that's if I was mayor, that would be a critical issue for me in order to ensure that we continue to have the public's confidence.
Because the city deal had trouble in getting the public on board, specifically when it came to the access control points, if I get the terminology correct, road closures, as most people would probably refer to it as. And I worry that at the moment, actually, people don't know too much about the combined authority. They don't know, they probably know even less about the LEP. And maybe there's a danger that once the scrutiny of the printed media, the broadcast media, radio and television looks quite hard at what the mayor is doing, all of a sudden the gaze stretches out to the rest of the board.
Well, you referenced the city deal, and that's a classic illustration where the concept I think was good. It was devolved money to
because the Lib Dems
the
were running the city council when it first came to pass.
We were part of the negotiated transaction in terms of the money coming to the region. But actually, if you look, the political composition on the board from its infancy through to today has been a Labour Conservative composition. Those are the politicians who vote. Its implementation has been disastrous. They've alienated the public. They set about a process where there was no clear political strategic vision. There was no resources. They decided they were going to run this new entity on a virtual basis. And the reality is that whoever is the mayor, and I believe that I will be the mayor after the 4th of May, that actually you need to put in place a clear set of principles and governance structures. And at the moment, as you said, the combined authority is taking decisions and the mayor hasn't even been elected. That really does worry me. And there's very little public public input, even in terms of the meetings, let alone in the broader set of issues that the combined authority is delivering on. And I think that needs to change. And as mayor, I would certainly...
What would you tidy up when you arrive, assuming you get elected? I have to say that to all of the candidates, of course. But on day one, you sit down. What are the first couple of things you do? And if you like, tidying up the structure of the way the authority is today?
I think tidying up's the wrong term, actually. I think it's a more fundamental look at the governance structure in a way that makes it far more... Look.
And what can you do? Because some of it's been handed down by our former Chancellor, George Osborne.
Firstly, that there is the defined role of the mayor as part of the devolution deal, but I think the role of mayor expands beyond that. And actually, you know, as a Liberal Democrat, I stand for the values of transparency, inclusiveness, accountability, and that needs to be applied to the mayor, the role of mayor, and to the combined authority. And I would certainly look to engage with those other key organisations, such as the local authorities, such as the city deal, so that we're not duplicating, so that we're actually delivering something on a coordinated benefit, on a coordinated basis for the benefit of the people of the region. And I view my role as mayor as being the voice for the people. I mean, as I've gone around the region and knocked on doors, people want something different to the way that the politicians have delivered in the past. And actually, as mayor, I believe that I can do politics differently and I can be a strong voice for people, not just in terms of delivering sustainable growth, but on those other once-in-a-lifetime issues such as Brexit.
OK, let's take a sort of a breather anyway. Some quick questions. I'm going to be asking these of all of the candidates. And I sort of want a yes or no, although I'm having interviewed a few politicians. I appreciate
can I
that not necessarily going to be the case.
Look where the yes or no answer got us to with Brexit. So I'm not sure I'm going to be giving you a yes or no answer. Life is a bit too complex. And I think we simplify things on yes or no, we suffer the consequences, as we found with Brexit.
Well, let's give it a go. I've got to get this feature through seven candidates before I change it for something else. Well, I think you'll appreciate the first one. Brexit, yes or no?
No for Brexit, yes for remaining in the EU.
Okay. Train, car, bus or bike?
All.
Okay, I noticed you came on a bike actually, which was impressive.
And can I just say that anybody who says that you should deliver a integrated transport system without any one of those modes of transport is not actually serious about delivering a transport system that the people of the region want. One in five households in Fenland do not own a car, and so buses are just as important as trains, are just as important as cycling, are just as important as private owned cars.
Cash or credit card, or maybe a charge card if you prefer?
Actually, you know, a debit card with my mobile phone as well is a combination of the two, actually, I tend to use.
Okay. Housing or green fields?
That's not a yes or no answer. That's a very difficult answer. Look, as part of the City Council, the ruling group on the City Council for the last local plan, you know, we preserved the green belt around the city because, in particular, its unique feature, this city's unique feature is that setting of the city, particularly to the west.
Okay, and the final one, definitely not a yes or no answer, but hopefully a short one. The weekend is for, and you're allowed to fill
what
in.
What is the weekend for?
What is the weekend for you?
The weekend is... it's a list. Shall I give you a list?
No, sure, one is good.
It's about politics, it's about running, it's about family, it's about friends. It's about basically making the most of every day.
All right, OK, let's get back to a few other issues here. We've discussed housing already, but your other priorities, one would assume transport and perhaps the environment as well. Do you support the idea of a clean air zone for Cambridge?
I think the concept of a clean air zone is a good one. If you look at the quality of the air within the city, it's atrocious. But it has to be done in a framework. You touched on the peak congestion control point scheme that the City Deal came up with. Any movement towards changing the dynamic of vehicular movement around the city needs to be done in a framework where people have other choices. You can't just apply the stick. I'm a big believer that, for example, looking at public transport that is sustainable in London, They've ordered 70 electric buses. I don't see why we cannot do the same thing in Cambridge. And the mayor will have the power as part of bus franchising to deliver that type of goal, which is a much more sustainable public transport system for the city.
And how do you do that? Do you sort of phone up Andy Campbell and say, you know, I'm ordering some buses and you're going to be putting them in on your most used routes?
No. Look, firstly, you would develop a strategy for the franchising of buses in parallel with an integrated transport plan. Each electric bus costs in the region of about £385,000. It is more expensive than a normal bus, but if you look at the payback is about 8 years in terms of use of fuel and so forth. So if you look at the overall value of that investment, it's materially higher than just going off and buying diesel. Mm. And, you know, I'd look to work with the existing providers, and to the extent those existing providers would have a vision that is not my vision, then I'd look to work with other people. And the mayor has the ability as part of the franchising to actually set up their own bus company. So that's an opportunity which I think, you know, makes a material difference in terms of an integrated transport plan, because off that you can introduce smart ticketing, you can introduce coordination with other forms of public transport such as rail, and it provides a complete different approach to this piecemeal approach that we've taken to transport in the past.
Do you think that's one of the problems, actually? You mentioned ticketing, and I think, well, I, like yourself, I go down to London from time to time, but I'm completely bemused because I'm catching a train which goes into King's Cross, and there's this smart ticketing set up by this company which runs into Liverpool Street. It's a very nice station, but I've got no intention of going there unless I really need to.
And that needs to be fixed.
And I'd rather like to use the same ticket on the bus as well.
Precisely.
If I could.
And that needs to be fixed. That needs to be fixed, and it needs to be fixed. And the only basis on which it will be fixed is if the mayor has that opportunity with a integrated regional transport plan. I believe
it's the key here, regional, because I mentioned that from Cambridge you've got technically it's three, but the two principal mm-hmm. operators on the trains, but you've got different bus companies just ever so slightly in Cambridge to what you might find in Peterborough, which is of course another mm-hmm. area you'll be responsible, Huntingdon as well, to be thrown into the mix. And is it something which actually would work on a regional basis but wouldn't necessarily work as well if it was just Cambridge?
Well, I think as mayor, I would look to introduce it on a regional basis. I mean, the reality is, as I gave the illustration earlier, a lot of people who work in Cambridge do not live in Cambridge anymore. A lot of people who work in Cambridge commute most probably up to an hour and a quarter. I mean, one of the things I've found out as I've talked to people and listened to them across the region is that, you know, a lot of the jobs are actually located in the south or towards Peterborough. But a lot of the communities and where some of the growth is at the moment is away from where the jobs are. And as mayor, I'm committed to delivering sustainable communities. And what do I mean by that? Sustainable jobs, which are close to the community, not far away. Sustainable transport that enables people to get to their jobs easily and not over a long commute. And then sustainable homes, which, and I mean by that, actually, more than just bricks and mortar, where people feel part of communities. It's not a dormitory type of settlement. Mm. I mean, there is a plan for, I'm sure you're familiar with it, 10,000 homes in Wisbeach. Now, there aren't 10,000 jobs in Wisbeach, right? There aren't 10,000 jobs. Where will those people work? They will come south or they will go west. That's ridiculous. You know, the infrastructure there around Wisbeach is not capable of carrying that.
And what do you need? Do you need to build the transport infrastructure to move the homes, or move the people,
well,
I should say, towards Cambridge and other places?
Well, you need to put jobs out into those areas, and then you need to put the infrastructure, the transport infrastructure, and then you need to put the homes. We've seen illustrations over the course of recent years where, you know, you are having communities built where there is no transport infrastructure.
Well, if we build it, they will come, kind of philosophy.
Well, it's kind of like, if we build it, they will come and they'll sort out their own transport. And what happens is people default to the car.
It's interesting because you get a new housing built with the affordable housing and the student accommodation, all the things we get, and it's said that there's no parking spaces because people are expected to use the public transport that isn't there. And then, of course, you see the streets littered with cars nearby.
Yeah. And look, it's more fundamental than that, because the issues, those three issues, jobs, homes and transport, they are interrelated. Let me give you an illustration. I, you know, sat down with the LEP, who one of the roles of the LEP is to actually direct skills. One of the biggest concerns that the LEP has is that actually young people are choosing not to go into further education in terms of either skills, so apprenticeships or so forth, or even moving on to A-levels. And the simple reason is because the county council has cut the subsidies for buses. So all the bus routes are being cut. And as a result of that, in rural communities, young people are deciding to actually just go and get a job because they can't get to the further education colleges. Now, at the moment, what's happening is some of those education colleges like CRC, like Huntingdon, they are subsidising the buses, but their budgets have just been cut as well, and they are saying they can't continue. So we're going to have a skills crisis looming.
So do you use some of your money to fund that?
Yes, because that goes to the heart of... I mean, this growth in this region is only sustainable if we have people with the right skills to do the right jobs. And actually, it goes beyond just those skills. It's actually, you know, giving people a set of skills for life that they can use depending on, regardless of what job they do. You know, young people most probably have three careers before they retire. So it's a fundamental thing that the mayor has an opportunity to address.
I want to talk briefly about Brexit. I know that's almost an oxymoron, but as we've mentioned earlier, you know, if there was another vote tomorrow, Cambridge would clearly be staying. But not necessarily so in the Fens, where there are concerns. And I wonder if that's sort of a reflection, if you like, of actually what's quite a diverse area that you could be mayor of come May the 4th, May the 5th.
Look, as I've gone round and listened to people, there are many voices in the region, and particularly as I've met people in the communities up in the Fens. They're not dissimilar from the community I come from. I come from a North Nottingham mining village, which, you know, was a farming community transformed by mining. If you look at March, same, it was transformed by railways. They're proud communities struggling to succeed, where, you know, they're frustrated that politicians have not served them well in the past. And I think one of the biggest issues is that, and I respect those people who voted to leave, but actually one of the biggest issues is that as mayor, I need to protect them. I need to protect them because it's those people. They did not vote to be poorer. And actually, hard Brexit will result in them being materially poorer. And it's those people that the mayor has the greatest duty in terms of being a strong voice for Brexit and ensuring we continue to be part of the single market and ensuring we get additional funding, because those are the people that will suffer most.
And what brought you from Nottingham to Cambridge or Cambridgeshire?
Education. And you know, I was very fortunate in that I went to a comprehensive and I managed to get a place here to study in Cambridge. And, you know, it was life transforming for me. And I'm a big believer in education and free education.
Have you always been a Lib Dem?
I joined the party in the early 2000s.
Never been a member of any other party before?
No member of any other party. My dad was a miner. He was a Labour councillor and a union official. So I kind of come from that part of the
some
world.
Some political awareness,
yeah,
anyway.
Yeah, look, and if you looked at me as a candidate, if you were a Labour voter, you would say, well, actually, I could vote for him because he's got, you know, that Labour heritage. And, you know, if you looked at me as a Conservative voter, because I've owned my own business and so forth, you could say, well, actually, I could vote for him as well. But in the reality is that, you know, I don't view myself like that. I view myself as a Liberal Democrat. And I think that's because as a party, you know, those principles of transparency, inclusiveness, you know, fairness are things that I espouse. And I am a believer that one of the key strengths we have as a party is community politics. And it's all about the community. And I got involved in it partially because of a community issue in Newnham, where we had a great set of Lib Dem councillors and they were very heavily involved. And that kind of led on to one thing and another. I became a councillor and so forth.
And here we are now, yeah, as a candidate for the Lib Dems for the mayor of Peterborough and Cambridgeshire. Rod Cantrell, thanks for joining us.
Thanks a lot.